In 1499, the Sforza fell from power. Leonardo sort of lost his paycheck, as it were. And he spent the rest of his life wandering around Europe. He ended up in France, really. Again, going from sort of place to place, looking for people who would support him. His artistic remains are intriguing. Not a single finished statue. About a dozen finished paintings. And thousands of drawings and sketches. Perhaps, indeed, we can see here his restlessness. His lack of focus. And it is just possible that these qualities, restlessness, lack of focus, may provide some insight into the enigmatic nature of his work. Perhaps his greatest achievements, however, weren't really artistic. That'll seem a bit ironic. But he was a person who raised interest in the structure and function of nature. Consider, by way of taking leave of Leonardo, what he said about a bird. No romance in Leonardo. A bird is an instrument working according to mathematical law, which it is entirely within the capacity of man to reproduce with all its movements, but not with a corresponding degree of strength, though it is deficient only in the power of maintaining equilibrium. We may therefore say that such an instrument constructed by man is lacking nothing except the life of the bird, which must needs be supplied by that of man. His contemporary, Leonardo's contemporary, Michelangelo Buonarroti, 1475 to 1564, was a Florentine of high birth whose family opposed his desire to be an artist. He became, in his lifetime, fantastically famous and wealthy. This is not common, actually, for great cultural figures, but in Michelangelo's case, it was true. He won the favor of Lorenzo, and he was supported by the Medicean Academy. Now, this was a time when Greek art was being discovered in great quantities. Remember Constantinople had fallen to the Turks? Large numbers of individuals fled the Greek world. They brought books with them. They brought their own learning traditions with them. But they also brought sculpture with them. So Greek art was being discovered in large quantities, and it was being held up as the model. It's really the fashionable thing then. Lorenzo didn't... Michelangelo, I'm sorry, did a great deal of sculpture that works on the Greek models, but finally, and in the end, he surpassed them. Now, he lived in times of tremendous strain, of tremendous stress, political stress, religious stress, the fiery preacher Savonarola talking every day in the streets of the cities about the sinfulness and depravity of man. All of these currents entered into Michelangelo's thinking, and then also into his art. We might say that to the calm repose of Greek art, Michelangelo added the power of human drama. Now, Michelangelo's time was also a period of tremendous medical advances. This is a time when the beginning of the careful study of the human body, dissection of cadavers, as we would say, was advancing as never before. Michelangelo was fascinated by this, and he took every opportunity he could to go and watch dissections. What he was really doing was studying the human body in all its dimensions, in all its forms. And as a result, his work studies the human form in an unprecedented way. There is a realism in his capacity to describe the body never before seen. But he didn't stop there either. In 1496, he went to Rome. He got a commission from a French cardinal to do a Pietà, that is to say, a sculpture of Mary holding the dead Jesus across her lap. The one which he did, of course, is just inside to the right of the doors in St. Peter's to this day. This is an astonishing synthesis of Gothic, Greek, and Christian art. But it surpasses anything that had ever been achieved before. Now, in 1501, he returned to Florence. This is the period when he did his monumental statue of David. Clearly, this was a study. In other words, he was working towards understanding how to depict the heroic. Now, after he had done the David, he returned to Rome to do a set of tomb sculptures for Pope Julius II. Only parts of this work were ever finished. The Moses, today in the Church of San Pietro in Vincoli, is the crowning achievement of what would have been Julius's tomb. But meanwhile, Julius asked him to undertake a new task, to paint the ceiling of the Sistine Chapel. Michelangelo protested that he was not a painter, but he accepted the work anyway because the Pope gave him much freedom to design the work as he wished, to work out the program for himself, to make a comment on art and philosophy, theology and philosophy. On the 31st of October in 1512, his ceiling was unveiled, and the history of art changed forever. This remarkable tableau, from the creation of Adam to the drunkenness of Noah, the height and the depravity of human beings. Michelangelo lived to be 89, but by the time he was 37, he had changed the world of art. He was patronized by the popes and by others, as indeed Leonardo was, as indeed Ennio Silvio had been. But we've seen then certain common themes, haven't we? Versatility, originality, classical influences. We've noticed a certain chronological progression. We've noticed an early focus on Florence and a gradual spread. In our next lecture, we must turn to what happened when the Renaissance crossed the Alps to northern Europe.